Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One. Ladies and gentlemen, the holidays are right around the corner. Before you know it, turkeys will be stuffed, and that fat guy with a white beard will be breaking into your homes in the middle of the night. Don't wait until the last minute to treat yourself or the people you love in life to marvelous Christmas presents like the Corolla Christmas Card Combo. This three-bottle gift set comes with a jolly Christmas card featuring and signed by each and every person that makes this the greatest podcast in the universe. So head to CorollaDrinks.com today. Get your Corolla Christmas Card Combo for only $60. That's three bottles of your choice, plus a Christmas card signed by the entire staff for only $60. Happy holidays from everyone at Corolla Drinks.
RockAuto.com. Why spend 30 to 50%, even 100% more for the same parts that a chain store or dealership might have? Why spend so much there? Why not go to RockAuto.com? It's a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Everything from engine control modules to brakes to motor oil, even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic car or your daily driver, get everything you need in a few clicks delivered direct to your door. Go to RockAuto.com. See all the parts available for your car or your truck. Write "doubt" in the "how did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. An amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com.
This is Corolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on a trip. Get it on and welcome to the best hour or so in the universe. It's Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. It's Mark Garagus in Salt Lake City, taking time away from his very important trial. And I guess Rittenhouse verdict is where we should start, right?
Right. How could we not? By the way, I remember saying Friday at 3 is the bewitching hour for jurors. And sure enough, like clockwork, the verdict came in before 3 o'clock. I don't know what it is about that. It's the, you know, a lot of people like to say it's anecdotal or something. I think there's a science to it. I just think jurors who are sitting in a trial with the prospect of the weekend coming up, and you get to the Friday finish line and you say to yourself, I've often said they want to get that last catered lunch in, but I don't want to be that guy. And then, boom, then they come back with a verdict on Friday afternoon.
Well, politically, if you got something to dump, you dump it Friday afternoon, you know.
That's very true. In this, usually a little later.
But in this, so there's two things. A, next week is Thanksgiving. So I'm sure that whatever you're describing was compounded by not only do we not want to go into the next week, but the next week is Thanksgiving. We'd like to start making our Thanksgiving plans, number one. Number two, to my statement, maybe there is an element of if we let this thing drop on a Wednesday, the shit may go down. Maybe we drop it a little later on a Friday and hope that we kind of get into the next news cycle before, you know, and prevent part of the shit from going down. That there may have been some of that thinking, spoken, unspoken. I don't know.
I don't know. But, and I haven't followed the news reports. I literally just stepped out of the federal courtroom, ran over here to do this. What's being reported? Is there, I've gotten besieged by texts, and we'll get into that in a second, as to people's reactions. But what's actually happening on the ground there?
I have not heard any unrest or cases of unrest, but I'm, like you, been busy and running around. So I've been keeping one ear to the ground, and I've not heard any major anything, although the shit does tend to go down when the sun goes down, you know, so the sun is still shining. So if there was, in fact, going to be something going down in some of the major cities, I think we'd have to wait a few hours on that.
Yeah, we're recording around 12:30 Pacific, so it would be even a few more hours in Wisconsin before darkfall.
You know, so far, I'll tell you some of the things that immediately popped in mind. I've already gotten texts from people who are close to me, or I'm close to, who are like, I can't believe this. Wow, blah, blah. I don't, you know, when they say that, maybe that's the people who actually have a life too. And maybe I've been following this a little bit more closely. And, you know, state court murder cases, homicide cases, are something I've done, you know, hundreds of. And it's not surprising to me. I think I told you, Adam, that if we were doing my old bell curve theory, it's from hung to not guilty based on everything that was happening. The one surprise to me was the dismissal of the gun charge. But you know what? When I went back and looked at the statute that he was charged with, it was very confusing, as the judge said. I've done statutory interpretation my entire career, and that subpart of the statute could be interpreted several different ways. And there's a thing in the law called rule of lenity, which basically says if you can go either way in interpreting a statute, then the tie goes to the runner, which is the accused, the person who's accused. We're not going to hold you responsible legally, criminally, and punish you for something that could be interpreted two different ways. So once I saw that, I understood it. And on last Sunday, when the judge was struggling with it, and Monday, then that made sense to me. Then this week, there's been all kinds of, criticism that's to some degree uninformed. The idea that, I'll give you one example. Yesterday there was this stringer, for those who don't know, the networks generally will hire somebody as a freelance. Mm-hmm. I think the word they use is stringer. Every high profile case, whether you know it or not, the jurors, if they're not sequestered, sometimes if they are, the stringers will follow the bus to and from the hotel. Mm-hmm. And try to identify who the jurors are, even when you've got them anonymously. The reason for that is not to intimidate the jurors, although it could be perceived as intimidation. The reason for that is to get the first get of a interview with a juror after the verdict. They compete, the morning shows, the cable shows, it's like cutthroat. It's like a bounty to get the first or second or third juror. And then if you get a juror who says something controversial and you know, it's all about that. That's what I think was going on.
Well, if it's standard operating procedure, then it's standard operating procedure. You know, if it's standard operating procedure in a case, you know, if it's in a murder case where the wife is accused of killing the husband, and it that doesn't have the social ramifications or the political ramifications, if they do it in those cases, then that's a plausible sort of deniability for MSNBC or whoever got slapped on the wrist for doing this. And that does give it a lot of context. The other stuff was the videotape. One was enhanced. The other was grainy. You know, the thing that jumped into my head that made me want to talk to you the most was the fella that they were referring to as like jump kick guy.
Right.
You know, so, you know, there's people they can recognize, people they've identified. You saw them, Gage Grosskreutz or whatever his name is. You saw, they found out who he was. They put him on the stand. Each side was able to sort of have at him. But then there was people they don't recognize. I don't know if I may not know this, but the guy who ran up behind Rittenhouse when Rittenhouse was retreating and whacked him in the head and knocked his hat off. That guy may just be hat hit guy. You know, they don't know who that guy is. And there was jump kick man.
Jump kick guy was because it was kind of an acrobatic move.
Yeah. It was, look, if you're, you know, I don't want to tell your business with the big three, but the guy had a vertical. I don't know if he looked like he may have played some ball, JC. I don't know what level he got to, but you may want to bring him in and have a look. I'm not saying you have to sign him. I'm saying take a look. That's all I'm saying. If you can get that kind of elevation in jeans, you know, imagine what he could do in some trunks.
Trunks, right? I mean, he looked like he had a good 44-inch vertical leap. That's they measure that at camp, you know. That's a deal.
Yeah, I know.
I think a few well-placed. I'm just saying.
Oh, sorry, yeah. I'm just saying, Mark. That's all. I'm an idea man. That's all. I think outside the box. So that guy was Jump Kick Man, except for the prosecution seemed to know who that guy was. And they talked to him. He tried to cut a deal with them, I guess. I guess the scuttlebutt is they said he was incarcerated and couldn't, you know, be a witness. It all sounded a little flimsy, a little shady, a little sketchy to me. It seems like what I like to do is reverse engineer everything. Let's just say Jump Kick Man was very important to the prosecution, and they thought that he could bring a lot of good to their argument. Would he then have made it to the stand? And I think if
are you kidding? That guy would have been, he would have not been in custody. He would have gotten immunity for his testimony. He would have had the friends and family benefit plan. Are you kidding me? It reminds me when you were mentioning that years ago, there was a case that some intrepid judge had ruled that when the prosecution is giving benefits to a witness in order to get them to talk, the judge had ruled that that was improper. That was suborning perjury or obstruction of justice. I forget what it was. And the argument was, if the defense did that, you'd be behind bars. But if the prosecutor does that, that's good prosecutorial method. And sure enough, the Court of Appeal, I forget where it was, but it was in one of the circuit courts, reversed it and said, no, that's okay. That's what prosecutor's job is. Their job is to seek the truth. It's a different standard than the defense. But trust me, if they needed Jump Kick Guy would have been on the stand with all the ups, extras, tip and service charge included.
Well, so then the next question is, you know, if the enhanced videotape, the high def versus the low res or whatever that rigmarole was, if that's a thing, then isn't sort of withholding Jump Kick Man's identity from the defense, isn't that a bigger thing?
Well, you know, I've named, as I've mentioned a million times, my dogs, Brady and Giglio, after the two kind of seminal U.S. Supreme Court cases on a prosecutorial duty to disclose favorable evidence to the defense. Favorable evidence could be the identity of Jump Kick Man. And if they know the identity and they don't disclose that, that is potential Brady material. The tape, to me, was mind-boggling. I watched the argument, and Gary, we mentioned this, and I still haven't found her name, and I apologize. The woman who made the argument about the analysis of the tapes, she said, basically, in a nutshell, that, look, if this had been Dropbox, it had been loaded in Dropbox in that app, it wouldn't have changed its name. It's obvious here that something was done to manipulate the tape, and it got a new name. And so the prosecution's position that they didn't know or they didn't do anything made no sense whatsoever. If you just uploaded it, it was just kind of garbage in, garbage out. Here, it was total garbage before it got into the prosecutorial blender. And that is infuriating as a defense lawyer. By the way, you've tried your whole case and you're literally at the door of your argument. And then all of a sudden they disclose something that is favorable to your client when you have spent an inordinate amount of time preparing the case, reviewing the reports in your head. You lose sleep on these things. When you're defending somebody whose life is in the balance, it takes a tremendous psychological toll on you. You've got somebody's life in your hands. You know, when you're fighting over other people's money, it's money. My mother used to say, if it's only about money, don't lose any sleep. But you fight about somebody's life, that takes a toll on you. And then to have somebody have something that's exculpatory, to have somebody that points to your clients not being guilty, and to get it at the end of the case when they have a duty to disclose it, is infuriating.
Well, just,
and by the way, this is something that's also infuriating about this coverage of this case. You know, it's been politicized to the point where, you know, okay, I'll distill it down. On the right, he's a hero. On the left, he's a white supremacist. Okay, let's take that aside for just one second. The one thing we can all agree on is he is the accused in a criminal case that has the greatest of stakes. You don't get greater stakes than this case. He's the accused. To label him with names or call him names, whether he's a dipshit 17-year-old or he's a hero who was on a mission to save his community, put that aside for a second. If you're a true believer in criminal justice reform, then how the heck do you say, this is white privilege, or this is somebody else wouldn't have gotten these breaks, or this is maybe that's true. I don't know. Who am I to say? But I know this much. You want the disclosure of evidence that is favorable to the accused. You want the prosecution to do that. You don't want the prosecution to play fast and loose, whether it's Kyle Rittenhouse or some other client that I've got who's black or brown. You still want the same set of ethical commitment by a prosecutor. Why is it that when you don't like the accused, then it's okay to run roughshod? But if you do like the accused, then the system is all fucked up.
Yeah. And just, it should be noted that my dog Phil was named after the dad from Modern Family. So just if you want to know,
Natalie Wisco was the name Mark was looking for at the beginning of that rant. And I don't know if you guys saw this one, but it was also caught by the internet that the defense attorney had a program on his computer called Handbrake, which I have on my computer and a lot of tech people would. But I bet Mark doesn't, because it's not something a lawyer would necessarily need. The software is purely for changing the quality of video and encoding it into different codecs. So that's a pretty bad look that lawyer who gave out a video of a lower quality, blamed it on iPhones or Androids or whatever, then had that software on his computer. Not saying that proves anything, but it's a bad look.
And back to Maurice Freeland, who's Jump Kick Man. That sounds even more of a dereliction of duty or nefarious or whatever words we're choosing than the video. How would that have worked? I mean, let's just say he was found guilty on three of the charges. Would they have immediately asked for a mistrial or what?
Mistrial goes up until the time of the verdict. So if you're asking for a mistrial, jeopardy has attached, meaning the jury has been sworn, the first witness has been called. And mistrial is, hey, time out. This case has got to stop and you got to dismiss it when the jury is there.
All right. If
the jury comes back with, by the way, the acquittals on all five counts, he's done. The prosecution does not get to appeal an acquittal. That and the presidential pardon power are the only two things under the U.S. Constitution that are mandated non-appealable. Those are the only two. Now, if he had been convicted and it turned out that they were sitting on Jump Kick Man's identity, and especially if the defense had asked about it, which I'm sure they did, because they probably did a blanket discovery request for any favorable evidence. By the way, under Brady and his progeny, you've got a duty to disclose that if you're the prosecutor. You didn't ask me, I'm not going to turn it over. You have a duty to turn it over and not to bury it in some kind of a document dump. So if he had been convicted, the first thing the defense would have done is filed a motion for new trial and put that before the judge and let the judge decide whether or not there was misconduct or that was exculpatory or it would have affected the verdict itself such that we can't be confident in the integrity of the verdict.
Well, now, so when we spoke at a different time a few weeks ago, and I was talking about the potential for Rittenhouse, if he's found innocent, to go after some of these news sources, some of these personalities, you know, I don't know, the ladies from The View, or even Joe Biden himself, President Biden, in a political ad or tweeting out things about him being a white supremacist and so forth. At the time, you said, well, he is going to get convicted of the gun charge. And once they hang the gun charge on him, then that's going to make the other his attempt at countersuits, if you will. They're not countersuits, but his attempt to go a la Nick Sandman from the Covington Catholic High School, going after CNN and other entities. Once they hang the gun charge on him, that'll be null and void. But they didn't hang the gun charge on him. They didn't hang any charges on him. Is he now freed up to go after some of these entities? And, you know, it's all in high def. I mean, they're saying he went there to kill people. He's a white supremacist, so on and so forth. I mean, it's about the worst, you know, the worst thing you can do to a 17-year-old or an 18-year-old is put him in prison for the rest of their life. But the second worst thing you can do is to label them at age 17 or 18 as a white supremacist or sympathetic to, you know, militias, white militias, and, you know, went there hunting, you know, went there to hunt people and so on and so forth. So who just called him? Oh, was that Kaepernick? Who called him a white Kaepernick? Well, call up Kaepernick. Is there liability here?
I have a tough time, and I haven't looked at some of the Wisconsin statutes. I can think in other state court jurisdictions where there may be, but generally, remember, he'd gotten past a probable cause proceeding, whether it's a prelim or an indictment. That's a probable cause proceeding. In most jurisdictions, and this is where you would start, you'd say, if he got past the probable cause proceeding, does that, in terms of suing the authorities, does that insulate or give them immunities? Now, if you could prove, in some jurisdictions, if you could prove that there was lying or withholding and it was intentional, and if it was done in such a way to put him in jeopardy, I could conceive, right? It would not surprise me if somebody came after the police in the case or they came after the prosecutorial team. But it's a very high burden. Prosecutors have immunities that are just amazing. I mean, I remember years ago, I think it was the case was out of, you and I discussed this once, the New Orleans DA's office, where they were almost affirmatively convicting somebody on bad evidence. And the U.S. Supreme Court said, no, it's okay, there's immunity for that. And there's also, you'd have a tough time unless you could lay it at the doorstep of the cops manipulating stuff and doing that. Prosecutors, they have such a high bar of immunity, it's incredibly difficult. Now,
I'm talking about civil stuff.
Civil. That's what I mean. Now, you're talking about, well, who would he hold accountable? I mean, the first thing they're going to say is the authorities are going to do that analysis. Then they go to the media. It would have to be, you've also got immunities there, and it depends on a defamation or a libel or something along those lines. And is it within the statute of limitations? Number one. Number two, is it done with it generally with malice? If it's which is the standard, and is this a matter of public interest? Clearly it is. So there's all kinds of analysis that takes place. Do I expect a lawsuit at this point? I think I probably do. I mean, contrary to what I said before, and I freely admit, I thought getting around the gun charge was his toughest hurdle, and he obviously the jury never had to decide that. The jury, it was taken away by the judge on the motion that the statute was infirm as alleged, and the facts did not support it.
Well, let me just try to do a comp for you, as they say in the real estate business. Nick Sandman, Covington High School, white teenage young boy, is involved with something that is filmed, and then CNN, we'll just keep it to CNN because I think they settled up.
Right. I don't think any of the other media outlets, unless I missed it, I don't think any of them settled yet.
So CNN has. So they cut him a check, right? So they had video of a young white man who did something, and they portrayed it a certain way. Now, they cut him a check probably because they made a business decision and A, maybe didn't want to spend the money at trial, but also there may have been a lot of things that were found in discovery that weren't particularly flattering to CNN, you know? So maybe they just said, we'll cut you a check.
He also settled with the Washington Post, just to clean that up for you. And he has come out and publicly said that he thinks that Rittenhouse should sue the media.
Sandman has.
Correct, Sandman
yeah.
has.
Yeah, and there's a, you know, obviously these are different cases, but they both have a lot of the same moving parts, which is news outlet, CNN, you've taken this young person and you basically smeared them and you had enough information to know that your portrayal of what happened wasn't actually as it happened because you did have the videotape and other ways, other modalities to figure this out. So this guy's young and he's got to go through the life. He's got to go through life with this saddle, this burden you've saddled him with because of his reputation. And then also CNN might not want to get into discovery once again, because who knows what kind of memos or emails are being passed around internally there. So might he get with, was it Woods?
Well, I don't know if Lynn had the Washington Post, but I know Lynn had the CNN case.
I wouldn't be surprised if Lynn Wood showed up and said,
Lynn was involved in this case at one point. If I'm not mistaken, Gary, I wasn't in the weeds as much then, but if I'm not mistaken, Lynn had some connection to the video that was released. Did he not?
I'll look for that. I'm not positive, but I remember he was definitely involved in the early stages of this.
He was definitely involved in this case.
Yeah.
Right. And then there was John Pierce in there, and then John Pierce got out of there. But you know what reminds me, Adam, as you were talking, it just occurred to me, and I haven't dove deep into it yet, but our friend Harmeet was putting out, you know, James O'Keefe, who we had on the show, had famously was describing to us how he had sued the New York Times and he had gotten past the preliminary kind of hurdle of the motion to dismiss and he was in a discovery phase. Well, apparently what happened was that there was a stay on the discovery while the New York Times appealed the order denying the motion to dismiss. And I don't know if Gary can find this. It's in Harmeet's Twitter.
Well, Harmeet is upset because, I mean, if you think about this, again, you know, I don't know if there's a smoking gun, and sometimes where there's smoke, there isn't always fire. But if you do the Project Veritas O'Keefe thing, they raid his home, the FBI does, to collect his cell phones and his information over the Biden's daughter diary that he claims he purchased but never published because he couldn't authenticate it, and then claims he contacted the police about it. And then I guess about a year later, FBI shows up. They want to know where it is, but they collect his phones. Okay. So he's got a bunch of sensitive information on his phones going back and forth, presumably with different attorneys about some of the legal machinations of suing the Times and whatever. They collect the phones. And then a couple days later, the New York Times prints stuff that was leaked from the phones. This doesn't sound, this really sounds pretty shady to me. And then now
I would agree. I mean, I think, just connecting the dots, and I'm not making any accusations yet because I'm clearly not in the weeds yet, and I have not talked to Harmeet about it, although I will. And the timeline you lay out is extremely concerning.
Yeah, I think they raided his home on a Saturday, and maybe Monday, New York Times is coming up with stuff that was on the stuff that was taken from the raid.
It was faster than that, well, I think. It was
faster than that.
And by the way, you know what happened intermediate? Gary can correct me, because I don't want to put out misinformation. If I'm not mistaken, as soon as his phones were seized, one of the first things you do, if you're in litigation on that matter or other matters, you go into the judge and you ask for what's called a special master. Special master, usually a retired judge, who will act as a person to be the gatekeeper for privileged information so that it doesn't get published, so it doesn't get into the hands of a prosecutorial agency, so it doesn't, you don't lose the privilege. One of the most sacred things we have constitutionally, statutorily, is the attorney-client privilege. We want to encourage people to go to lawyers and be frank about their problems, so the lawyer presumably can give them advice on what's the best way to ameliorate the problem. If it's the case, and I just say if, I don't know, but if he's in litigation here with the New York Times and law enforcement has seized these things, and the judge ordered, if I'm not mistaken, a special master, or at least briefing on whether there's a special master, and basically press pause, put a hold on, hey, Mr. Prosecutor, Mr. Investigator, don't you go looking. You got to wait until I decide whether or not I'm going to appoint a special master, even if you're at that stage. And then next thing you know, the New York Times is printing or publishing the information which the judge hasn't even reached the point of whether to appoint a special master. And God knows that the special master hasn't even looked at it to say whether it's privileged yet. If that scenario plays out, that's absolutely breathtaking.
Well, it's not a world we want to live in, because it kind of feels like the FBI is doing the bidding for the New York Times and everything's become politicized. But I'd be curious what the New York Times printed and if they can verify it's from the phone. I'll buy Gary a minute to do that. First, I'll tell you about Lightstream. Holidays are approaching. Want to save some extra money? Consolidate your high-interest credit card balances to a lower rate and save with Lightstream. Lightstream offers credit card consolidation loans with rates starting at 4.98 APR with auto pay and excellent credit, much lower than the national average of over 19%. Rate is fixed, so as rates continue to rise, your low rate will not budge. No fees. You can get your money as soon as the next day. And just for our listeners, apply now for a special interest rate discount and save even more. Only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/doubt, lightstream.com/doubt. Right, Gary?
That's right. Subject to credit approval, rates range from 4.98 APR to 19.99 APR and include a 0.5% auto-paid discount. Lowest rate requires excellent credit. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/doubt for more information.
So, Gary, you can look around for that, but it is also a little fishy that the FBI is heading in to raid people's houses because they have a diary of the president's daughter that they possibly don't have or gave back to the police or never published. That seems a little Orwellian to me as well.
And apparently, at first it was, a lot of people, it's James O'Keefe. You know what I mean? There was that kind of reaction. Then people started to digest what this was, and that's a little frightening as well, isn't it? I mean, if you just try to divorce yourself from the label of coming to this, why is it okay if it's somebody we don't like? You know, that's the thing about speech and the thing about the Constitution. It's supposed to protect even those you don't like, and even speech you don't like. You don't get to just pick and choose it. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, boy, do I know what you're saying. All right, we'll take a quick break, a little more with Mark right after this. RockAuto.com. Why spend 30 to 50%, even 100% more for the same parts that a chain store or dealership might have? Why spend so much there? Why not go to RockAuto.com? It's a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers, everything from engine control modules to brakes to motor oil, even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic car or your daily driver, get everything you need in a few clicks delivered direct to your door. Go to rockauto.com. See all the parts available for your car or your truck. Write "doubt" in the "how did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. An amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. So, Mark, you know, I feel like the Rittenhouse thing, I don't know if it opens it up civilly for, we were speaking maybe last week about a cop who made the donation to the Rittenhouse Defense Fund. He did it anonymously, but of course somebody broke into it, and then he got laid off or suspended or fired. There was another guy who may have been like a mailman or an ambulance driver or something. They went and found whoever gave to the Rittenhouse Defense Fund, and they went and disciplined those guys. Now, it seems like the door may be open for some lawsuits in that direction as well. But you tell me, here's my question. If I give to a defense fund, and let's just say I give to Kyle Rittenhouse, somebody finds out, and I get fired from my job, and Kyle Rittenhouse is found guilty on all five charges, is it more difficult for me to do a civil action against my boss who fired me if he's found guilty on all charges versus innocent on all charges? Because there's something that goes along with innocent on all charges, which is not only did I give to the defense fund, but it turned out I was right.
Well, if I'm going to design a fact pattern for somebody to come in and say, I want you to take some kind of action to hold my employer accountable for terminating me, and if there's a viable cause of action, the fact pattern I want is a not guilty verdict, which they would say, well, that doesn't mean he's innocent. That just means they didn't prove he's guilty. But the reason you have wind at your back is, why can't I, you know, he is presumed under the law to be not guilty, as is everybody who isn't accused. Just because you don't like this case, that doesn't suspend the constitutional presumption of innocence. So, yeah, if I'm designing something, I certainly would design that fact pattern and some kind of workplace retaliation for what? For supporting somebody's constitutional right to a presumption of innocence.
Mark, I know you got to hop back to the courtroom.
I do. Gary, I do. And I got to put the tie on. You guys will. I'll miss you guys. Love you guys. And I'm coming back to California.
Cannot wait. I'll be waiting at the Van Nuys Executive Airport with a basket of Don Julio.
Thank you. You know how to keep a guy happy.
Thanks, Mark.
Bye, guys.
Gary, we can talk a little about the Project Veritas case. And I don't know if you're able to find anything, but the New York Times got hold of stuff.
Memos basically that had Project Veritas talking to their lawyers about what level of reporting they could do, before they started to run afoul of federal law, which New York Times is painting as, you know, these guys are asking how far can we go, how much can we lie before we're going to be held federally liable for it. That's how they're painting it.
Uh-huh. But
and
it's still
currently a judge jumped in. Sorry to interrupt that. A judge jumped in on Thursday and banned the New York Times from continuing to report on Project Veritas until a new hearing on Tuesday. So over the weekend, that's sort of where we stand. The New York Times is freaking out and saying that that's unconstitutional, but that's where we stand.
And the timeline's still consistent, right?
So
FBI raids.
Sort of depends who you ask. I mean, the New York Times claims that although, yes, they published after the raids, they received the documents based on which their stories were based before the raid, before he was arrested. So, you know, who you believe in? I don't know.
I don't know. What I keep sort of getting back to, just as a human being, I just feel like it all feels kind of brazen. You know what I mean? Like, they just raided this guy. Now we're going to publish this. Even if we got the info before the raid, is it going to be kind of weird optics? Like, I feel the same way about the Yentas at The View. Like, when they start going, this guy's a cold, you know, Rittenhouse. He's a cold-blooded killer. He went out hunting that night, took his...
I feel like if I was the news organization, I would try to figure out a way, and I'm not positive how this works, but I would try to figure out a way to sort of prove that I had this stuff before that. And I feel like there's a way to do that with redacting names and whatever, where you still protect your sources, but you kind of go, hey, look, I know this looks fishy, but here's my thing right here, and I can point to it and show you.
Right. You know. This is sort of, it's like the Gavin Newsom leave of absence, not going to the climate summit, that, you know, a day and a half after he got his booster shot, everyone speculated that he had a bad reaction to the booster shot. And his thing was like, I wanted to go trick or treating with my kids.
Hey, by the way, I'm sorry, but if you're going to still hold the emergency powers that you enacted 21 months ago, tell your son that Halloween's canceled because daddy has an important job.
Right.
Fuck you. Fuck you. My dad worked. He was out of town for holidays. It was fine. He was working. I understood.
Yeah.
That's a terrible answer.
But also, to tie it back to the New York Times, Gavin Newsom, you got your booster shot. The next day, you canceled your trip to Ireland or Scotland. What is this? Glasgow. Anyway, you canceled your trip. The thing you must have had in your circled on your calendar for a year. Fine. Understand the optics are not going to be great. People are going to ask questions, and they may have assumptions, and they may wonder why you're staying home and not going abroad. So if, in fact, you just canceled it and there's nothing to see here, then just do a short little video of you saying, here I am. I just worked out. I'm feeling strong.
Well, that's the thing that, you know, when my wife and I were talking about this, it was, he has an Instagram account. He can go live on Instagram right now with CNN in the background to prove that it's right now, and he's fine. You can squash this in a second.
Right. And sort of New York Times, if people are going to accuse you of taking information that was seized on the raid a day or two earlier, then you figure out a way to present it where you can.
It was probably digitally delivered. Just show us a record of, you know, the timestamp of when you got it, you know, type of thing.
All right. Last but not least, there's Geico. Do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other with your home, right? And then there's your automotive policy. You know, it's easy. Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renter's insurance along with your automotive policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy when you go to geico.com. All right, December 15th, Brea Improv, two shows. We're taping live for the Daily Wire, so if you want to be a part of the live filming, come on down. T.J. Miller, Patrick Warburton's going to be up on the other show. Also, December 22nd, 23rd, Portland, Oregon, Helium Comedy Club. And you can check out our Pluto TV channel, our 687, our chassis channel on Pluto TV. Got all the movies there. Got the Newman doc, got the 12 O'Clock Boys, which you guys should watch. It's a really cool doc. Shelby, it's all there, 24-Hour War. And going racing with Adam Carolla as well. So, until next time, Adam Carolla for Gary and Mark saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Corolla Digital.
Geico, do you own, do you rent your home? Well, you do one or the other. You work hard enough. How about you do a little bundle? Bundle with Geico. Make it easy to bundle the homeowners and renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got enough to do. You're busy these days. Save a bunch of money. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save when you visit geico.com and get to bundling.
Hi, I'm Caitlin Van Maul, host of I Survived. If you enjoy I Survived, we are excited to announce a new launch. Starting November 15th, we'll be reposting our classic episodes from season one of I Survived. We hope to reach a whole new audience with these important stories of survival. And for those of you who have been with us since the beginning, we think these powerful episodes warrant another listen. Starting November 15th, look out for those episodes and more news from I Survived.